Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Coming up later this hour, we'll speak to student journalists from across the state about how they're continuing to report for their publications, even if they can't be on campus. And we'll be speaking with hospital workers about how they're preparing for a surge of COVID-19 patients. But first, the coronavirus that's causing a global pandemic is continuing to infect people across Illinois. Over the weekend, state officials announced 1,570 new confirmed cases. But as they keep telling us, those numbers are likely artificially low because testing people who think they might have COVID-19 is still so limited. In fact, that was the subject of Governor J.B. Pritzker's daily news conference on Sunday. Pritzker says at the beginning of last week, Illinois was testing 2,000 people a day. By this weekend, that doubled, but he says it needs to go a lot higher than that, all the way to 10,000 tests a day.
That marker, 10,000, is significant because it's the number of tests per day that the scientists and experts tell us that we need to get a truly holistic understanding of the virus in each of our 102 counties.
Pritzker says more testing will let public health officials create better mathematical models to see whether the shutdowns and social distancing requirements are actually working. Meanwhile, public health officials reported an additional 31 deaths from COVID-19 over the weekend. Dr. Ngozi Ezike, Illinois' public health director, says that includes the state's youngest known coronavirus disease patient.
There has never before been a death associated with COVID-19 in an infant. A full investigation is underway to determine the actual cause of death. I want everyone in Illinois to take COVID-19 serious. If you haven't been paying attention, maybe this is your wake-up call.
To catch up on the latest with COVID-19, we've got a panel of reporters from across Illinois. In the north, from NPR station WNIJ in Rockford and DeKalb, it's Jenna Dooley. She's the news director there at Northern Public Radio. Jenna, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks, Brian.
And from member station WGLT in Bloomington Normal, it's Ryan Denham. Ryan, thank you for being here.
Hey, Brian.
And in the south, in southern Illinois, it's Molly Parker. She's a reporter at the Southern Illinoisan. Molly, thanks for making the time for us.
Thank you, Brian.
Jenna, I'm going to start with you. Just in a general sense, what are you seeing in the northern part of the state?
We cover portions of the collar counties outside of Chicago, as well as a large area from the Wisconsin border down to the Illinois Valley around Starved Rock, and then kind of creeping over into the Mississippi River area. So it's a large area, and we've seen cases pop up in our backyard. Notably, there was a confirmed case that involved a person who was in a campus building at Northern Illinois University. Now, obviously, students were no longer on campus. Faculty and staff largely are working remotely now. But that one started, I think, to really hit home for folks that this wasn't theoretical, that the measures that are being taken were in fact being taken for a particular reason.
And you say that's a student, so a younger person, I presume?
Yeah, I believe it was a person in their 20s. They hadn't been regularly in the building, but the campus was transparent and did send out a notification to the campus community that, in fact, it had come to campus.
Yeah, and I get you are in the epicenter there, or near the epicenter, I guess, which is in Illinois, is still in Chicago and the collar counties and suburbs. But I guess the idea that a young person was infected there sort of is a good reminder that even though you hear that this disease affects, it's worse for older people, it can hit anyone at any age.
And when I want to be clear that we had been taking precautions, it did start out theoretical, saying, how do we protect ourselves as a community service to make sure here in our building we can continue to make sure that you hear a voice during the mornings, during the afternoons, when, you know, how do we transmit this information? So we started to really go to a bare bones operation and start having reporters work remotely and finding ways for technology to allow us to do that. But because we use a lot of shared equipment, we started thinking about things about, you know, how do you use your own headphones or swapping in. Right now I have my own mic screen that I'm supposed to take on and off so that we don't have any of those shared spaces. And so we had started putting those in place for the event that there would be a case on campus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess I should, this is the, maybe a time to disclose, I'm actually broadcasting the show from my home today. So definitely trying to keep social distancing as we go about our jobs. Ryan, I want to bring you into the conversation. You, WGLT is in Bloomington Normal, right in the heart of central Illinois. I wonder, what are you seeing in your community? What's the latest with coronavirus there?
Yeah, sure. So we have 14 confirmed cases so far, including one death. We have among the higher numbers for downstate counties. Kind of big story here has been testing, or the lack of testing. That picture changed a little bit on Saturday when we saw the opening of the first state-run testing facility, a drive-up testing facility in Bloomington here. And so we saw about 80 people get tested on the first day there. Another 70 the next day. Still, that's still well below the capacity of that drive-up site. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a continuing loosening of criteria for who can go there. That's sort of been the story here.
And Molly, same question to you. What about Southern Illinois? What's happening down there?
Same issues as the other reporters are mentioning, testing, certainly we've had pretty low numbers of tests and low numbers of cases, although we're starting to see that change. We've had a couple, and we cover in the Southern Illinois, and it's basically the only daily newspaper that's covering about 16 counties with just three daily news reporters. So it's a big area, not a lot of people to go around, but we're starting to see a few cases here and there, three in Jackson County that we're Carbondale is located. Two of those are SIU students. So we've also had this affect our SIU campus. The campus has gone to online classes, but there are still about 400 of roughly 1,700 kids that were staying in the dorm or students. Roughly 400 of them are there now. And so two of them have tested positive, and they've got about 21 students on isolation just because they might have had contact. They're not showing symptoms. They're not tested positive for this, but just in the meantime, because they might have had some sort of interaction with the other two cases.
So Molly, it sounds like the southern part of the state is maybe in an earlier phase of this pandemic in terms of the number of people who are at least known to be infected with it. Do you get a sense, in to the extent you're out talking to people or on the phone talking to people, about the public attitude? Do people feel that this is real, or do they see it as a problem for somewhere else?
I think it's a little bit of both. I definitely think once we got our first case, we had cases in Jackson and Williamson County, where Marion is located, the week before last. And I think those first cases definitely, you know, bring it home. Although we suspect, of course, we've had it here much longer than that, but having those first confirmed cases, I think, definitely sends shockwaves throughout the community to say, hey, this is very serious. Of course, there are some people who, you know, feel like it's overblown. I think you'll have that. I think there are people who feel like the measures that should apply to the hotspots that we're seeing, areas that are seeing their surge, you know, maybe shouldn't apply to the more rural areas. Of course, there's questions there about, you know, with the limited testing, we don't really know what the picture is here.
Right.
And until we have that, we don't know if we're, you know, these are just the tip of the iceberg, or if we are going to see a lower number of cases. I listened to a report, an online call with the CDC specifically on rural areas, and we are advantaged in that we are already spaced out. Social distancing is easier, especially when you get into the really remote southern seven counties. But, you know, they also said don't let your guard down. It only takes a person to see this, like in an emergency or in a long-term care facility, a nursing home, which could overwhelm our hospitals because a rural area may only have one hospital with 25 beds or so serving two or three counties. So we have some positive things working in our favor and also some concerns, I think, on the capacity side that people are concerned about.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right about that. In the suburbs, at least, in DuPage County, I remember the first nursing home case was reported. They did some testing there and found that there were already dozens of residents and staff infected. You know, you talk about people out and about. Ryan, I want to ask you, Personally, I did my family's weekly grocery run on Sunday morning. It was the first time I'd been to a store in more than a week. And I got to say, I was surprised at the number of people out and about, including older people who, you know, at least appear to fall into this more vulnerable age range. Ryan, are you seeing that in your area as well?
Yeah, in an anecdotal sense, I certainly see whenever I venture out. I went out over the weekend to visit one of the testing site and stopped at a grocery store. And yeah, there's a fair amount of people. I don't know what we're asking people to do. You know, if not that, then you have to sort of rely on online grocery delivery. But there's a good backlog there too. You have to wait, what I've heard, you know, a week to have things brought to you. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I do sense that there are still people going out pretty regularly, but I guess what do you expect, you know?
Yeah, no, you're right about that. What about testing in your area? You mentioned visiting that testing site over the weekend. Do officials feel they have enough, or is it the same story we're hearing everywhere else, where there's more limited?
Same story that we're hearing everywhere else. Our local public health officials have been pretty candid about their perception that there are just not enough tests available, so they have to be kind of stringent on what criteria they deploy to test people. You know, on Friday and Saturday, I interviewed like four different people who themselves or a loved one pretty much assumes they had COVID-19 or have it, were told they would not be tested. And so in a county where we have 14 confirmed cases, it's not hard to see that it could be a lot more that we just don't have a number for. So how does that change public perception of this whole thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Jenna, I wonder, what are you hearing from health officials in your area? What are they most worried about?
Our reporter Chase Cavanaugh talked to Lisa Gonzalez, the public health administrator in DeKalb County, and testing does remain through a healthcare provider and focused on that limited subgroup, looking at those who are severely ill or fit into the criteria like a chronic health condition or a weakened immune system. Interestingly enough, health officials really pressured Aurora's mayor and Aurora's police chief to get tested, and in fact, they are confirmed cases. Aurora's mayor and police chief did test positive for COVID-19. So I think some people have been commenting, like, why do celebrities seem to get tested? Well, in some cases, politicians or people who are at the front lines of getting information out in their communities, like mayors, like police chief, are being urged to get tested. And in this case, in Aurora, it did come back positive.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. And I guess, you know, my view on it is if we're counting on the mayors and the governor and people like that to actually, like you say, impart public information, it probably makes some sense to sort of put them to the head of the line. But obviously, questions out there about the availability of testing for the rest of us. Just a couple of minutes left. Molly, I want to bring you back. This is a national crisis, but unlike in the past at times of national crisis, it was clear you could, you know, if you wanted to do something, you could go volunteer at a shelter, you know, even join the army during World War II. But now we're told that doing our duty means staying home. And yet you've reported on some people who are still trying to find a way to make a difference. Can you tell me about a young man named Cooper? Is it Bathon?
Yes. Cooper is a 5-year-old preschooler at Pinckneyville, which is in Perry County. And his mom saw a call out on Facebook from the Pinckneyville nursing home asking for TVs and DVD players, because a lot of their residents are low income and don't have TVs in their room. They rely on activities to keep them busy, and the seniors are used to getting up and doing things, and they're being asked to stay in their rooms more right now and do just solo activities. And as you can imagine, you know, when you're older and in a nursing home, loneliness is a big issue for people. And so they're trying to come up with ways to keep them occupied. And she mentioned this to her son. He had an extra TV and DVD player in his room, and just ask him if he would want to donate it. Explained that, you know, people like his great grandma, who lives at home but is in that age bracket, could be lonely and maybe needing something to do. And so he wanted to give that out. And I think it was a little story, but it just shows that in this time, while we can't maybe do the traditional volunteer thing, that people are thinking about things they can do. They're sewing masks or getting groceries for their neighbors that are elderly or for people who have confirmed COVID and can't go out. I mean, I have actually been, it's one of the silver linings to see that people coming up with unique ways to help each other out during this time. I think that's one of the positive aspects of this.
And you just briefly in about 15 seconds we have left here, but you covered, you mentioned sewing machines. Can you just talk a little bit? This is becoming a widespread thing where people are trying to contribute to the shortage of personal protective equipment for healthcare workers.
That's right. And I'm sure across the state as well, but across Southern Illinois, we've got lots of people out there who are turning their sewing machines into living room factories and making masks for people. The masks are not ideal and they are not considered personal protective equipment like the N95 masks that everybody wants, but they are in high need and high demand by first responders, nurses, and others when this is all they can have. And so I think that's another area where you're seeing people step up and try to help.
Molly Parker is a reporter at the Southern Illinoisan. We also spoke with Ryan Denham from WGLT in Bloomington Normal and Jenna Dooley, the news director at Northern Public Radio in DeKalb. Molly, Ryan, Jenna, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll hear from healthcare workers preparing for a surge in COVID-19 cases. I'm Brian Mackey. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.